I'm one of those lucky people who get to eat pizza every Friday night. Now, sometimes I wish we would go to some place other than Zeke's in Kirkland, but this is where we gather each week with our middle son, Andy, and his husband, Brian, and our two grandchildren, Dominic and Ariel. I just love being with the kids. But it's also an opportunity to catch up with the adults, to share what's going on in our busy lives. Now, our son-in-law, Brian, is not a churchgoer. And even though he's been in our lives for 15 years, he doesn't really understand what I do as a priest. But then again, most people don't know what we do. Now, remember, this year, Ash Wednesday fell on February 14th, which is also our cultural celebration of Valentine's Day. So, several weeks ago, at the Friday evening pizza gathering, Brian asked, "What are you guys doing for Valentine's Day this year?" And I said, "Hey, it's a big year. I will be rubbing dirt on people's faces and reminding them that they are going to die." Brian said nothing, but he took a big swig of his beer. Welcome to Lent, folks. On this second Sunday in Lent, Jesus predicts his death for the first time in Mark's gospel. The Son of Man must undergo great suffering, Jesus tells his disciples. He must be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed. And after 3 days, rise again. Now, as people who live on the other side of the resurrection, I think we miss the shocking power of the words that Peter heard. Jesus' prediction shatters Peter's hope. Remember, Peter and his companions and most of the Jews at that time were expecting a Messiah that would liberate them from Roman occupation and restore the Jewish people to the land that God promised them. They've seen Jesus feed multitudes of people, heal the sick, clear the temple. They've even seen him raise the dead. And they've heard him proclaim the arrival of a new and a glorious kingdom that will never end and will never fail. They have seen Jesus' power. So why on earth is Jesus talking about his death? Could it be that suffering and death are intimate parts of the human experience? If Jesus is fully human, then why would he be exempted from human disappointment or betrayal, struggle, suffering, and death? Now, I must tell you, I totally identify with Peter in this story because I certainly don't embrace my suffering, and no, I haven't reconciled with the reality that I am going to die. I quite willingly join the death-defying culture we have as I embrace the distractions that wealth and entertainment, fitness, beauty, cosmetics, alcohol, and leisure offer to keep me from realizing that I am aging and that I will die someday. But denying and ignoring something doesn't make it go away, does it? So Jesus rebukes Peter's denial. And he says, "Get behind me." The Greek verb used here suggests a leader commanding his followers to fall in formation behind him. So Jesus is inviting Peter to follow where Jesus is leading, because good followers get behind their leader. And then he announces to the crowd, "If any of you want to become my followers, you must deny yourselves and take up your cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake or for the sake of the gospel will save it." Quite a paradox. But oh dear, these are troublesome words. They have been used by people in abusive power relationships throughout history to keep suffering people in their places and deprive them of the power and the agency to change their situations. Statements like this informed the Marxist critique of religion as the opium of the masses that keeps suffering people where they are and promises and assures them that their suffering will earn them the pie in the sky when you die. Does God really mete out suffering to God's beloved children and then reward them with heaven for putting up with the pain? Ugh. What is the image of God behind this theology? Please join us this Wednesday for the Contours of Christian Faith series as we gather and we explore your images of God and some others from our tradition. Your images of God are pretty important to your spirituality. I don't think that the kind of self-denial that Jesus is talking about here is encouraging people to perpetuate their victimhood. Actually, true self-denial, the voluntary denial of one's self for the sake of love, that can be empowering and liberating. It was about 12 years ago that I met Chris. And let me just tell you, Chris is not his real name, and I've de-identified many of the details of the story and changed them a bit to protect Chris's confidentiality. But it was about 12 years ago when I met Chris on the inpatient oncology unit at Swedish Hospital First Hill, where I worked. I was working as a palliative care chaplain at that time. And if you aren't aware of that term, palliative care is a medical specialty that helps people live better with life-limiting illness. Yes, it can involve end-of-life issues, but it often concentrates upon pain and symptom management and optimizing a person's quality of life. Our palliative care team was asked to consult because Chris's oncologist was perplexed, and he was actually experiencing moral distress because Chris was refusing some of the medical treatments that he was being offered. Chris was only 35 years old. He's a married man, and he was the father of two small children. And his doctor just did not understand why Chris didn't want everything that was being offered to him to preserve his life. Well, when I met with Chris, and explored his background and heard the history of his illness, he explained that he had been living with cancer for more than 15 years. Each time his cancer reappeared, he would have surgery and he would do the full protocol of chemotherapy. He told me, "My life has been a roller coaster, but it's been good. My cancer has come back 5 times. Early on, it was about fighting the cancer and doing everything to win the battle with this disease. Despite periods of remission and reoccurrence, I experienced 3 job promotions. I fell in love and I got married. I had 2 children. And I lived my life as fully as I could. It's been really hard. But boy, I feel blessed. My life is so full of love. Now I'm hearing that my cancer can't be cured. I just want to live the best I can for as long as I have left. I want to play with my daughters and cuddle with my wife. I want to listen to and learn more from my grandpa because he's the wisest and most loving man I've ever met. I finally realized that this is the life that God has given me to live. I didn't start really living until I accepted that I was dying. I didn't start really living until I accepted that I was dying. Could it be that taking up our cross is to live life on life's terms? To accept and to live the life that God has given you to live? To truly accept that disappointment and betrayal and suffering and death are intimate parts of the human experience? To take up a cross as Jesus did is to stand courageously in the center of the world's pain. Even more importantly, to show up and enter into another's suffering and be with them is taking up their cross, easing their way, and truly being with them in their suffering. This is what it means to be a person of compassion. For that word comes from the Latin compassio, meaning to suffer with. This is what it means to get behind Jesus and follow him. Yes, we follow him to the cross, but we also share in his resurrection. On Ash Wednesday at the hospital, as I was rubbing dirt on people's faces and reminding them that they are going to die, I had one patient ask me to refrain from tracing the cross on her forehead in ashes. She asked, "Since it's Valentine's Day, can you put a heart on my forehead instead of a cross?" Well, the liturgist in me recoiled as I did what she requested, but then I softened as I looked at this huge black cross of ashes, a heart of ashes on her forehead. It was unexpectedly beautiful. And then she said, the cross and a heart. They're really the same thing, because it's all about love, right? Indeed, it's all about love. It's all about love.